Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And it's time now for the Friday gathering. And this week I'm joined by Green Party Senator and Spokesperson for Education, Pauline O'Reilly, AIMTHU leader and TD for Meath West, Pather Tobin, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, Gabby Agata-Fitzgaita, and media consultant and founder of Effective Age Ukraine, Tom McEnany. Thank you all for coming in today. So listen, there's going to be a really big week next week. Lots of challenges facing the incoming Taoiseach Simon Harris. Gabby, I'm going to start with you on this. He's due to be formally elected next Tuesday. First of all, what do you think is the state of the party that he is inheriting from Leo Varadkar?
Okay, so the imminent, I suppose, topic that that's facing Fine Gael that we're all very excited about, that Fine Gael TD senators and ministers are very excited about, is the reshuffle. That actually is not the challenge that's facing him at all. It's very important for him to tread carefully. You don't want to annoy too many people. But the biggest challenge is going to be undoubtedly electorally. He has about 2 months, two, 3 months now to energise the party, to put really good candidates on the ballots for local and European elections, and to most importantly, get the vote out. I mean, that is, if you speak to anybody in Fine Gael, Leo Varadkar didn't really deliver for the party when it came to Dáil seats. And so Simon Harris is going to have to really, really do his best to shield the party as much as possible in the locals and Europeans. And of course, at some stage after that, the general, that's going to be the true test. But really, the biggest challenges that are facing him, as any party leader, will be electorally. But it's the threat of Sinn Féin that really could be existential for Fine Gael.
OK, and Pauline, from your point of view, like, we've been told in the midst of all of this change that the programme for government stays and you've got another year to go. But what are your priorities now for this last year, as we expect it to be?
Look, I mean, the year before last, we had a reduction in emissions of 2%. And last year, for 2023, we're looking at a reduction of nearly 5%. So it's to keep that going. And keeping that going means putting in place all of the things that we have been doing, like one new rural bus service a week. The rural transport, actually, use of buses has gone up 500% since we've been in government. But it's all of those things. And childcare. We'll see a reduction of 50% in childcare fees by September. These are all on the green side of the house. We want to continue that. We need to be there to do that. But, we need to make sure that we're not seeing any of those priorities, I guess, drop.
Yeah. Are you concerned about that? Because we have heard from Simon Harris that he has a certain set of priorities now, and it looks as though there's going to be a recentering of Fine Gael, a focus on things like law and order, on business, on farming. That might not fit with all of your agenda.
Well, all of those things fit with our agenda, if you want to call it an agenda, in terms of farmers need to be paid properly for small family farms. That's our priority. We've seen a quadrupling of organic farming, for instance, with an average of €12,000 per year for farmers. They're signing up. So all of those things are priorities for us. I'm not concerned. But I think we need to keep saying that the Greens are there to make change happen and change the people are, happy with, because it makes their lives easier.
So you need to remind government this can't be Simon Harris's agenda for the next 12 months. It has to be a coalition agenda, right?
There's three parties in, and I think, coalitions work best when everybody is working together to make sure that they're all getting their priorities seen and heard. And we've been doing that.
Are you concerned
about this? The 5% reduction in emissions last year just demonstrates
that. This talk that there might be a mini budget, or that there's a push on to have a mini budget, some of that pressure coming from independents. Would you like to see that?
I think that you need to do things like, for instance, support businesses. I think that absolutely has to be a priority.
So you'd be in favour of,
already said that.
You'd be in favour of some sort of a measure being taken.
In favour of supporting businesses through difficult times. And I think there are difficult times. And from our point of view, the green economy is very much there for the taking for Ireland.
So the Greens wouldn't stand in the way of a mini budget then?
I can't answer for Cabinet. I mean, it's a decision for Cabinet. I think that you always have to reflect and look at where people are struggling and put in place things to support them.
Tom, do you think it would be advisable for Simon Harris to do that, to have a mini budget?
No, I think it would be eaten bread quickly, forgotten by the time election comes around. I think we'd be much better off.
Well, it depends on when you have your election.
It depends on when you have your election. But he needs to put off having election at least until after the next budget so that he can have some kind of impact, so he can show what a Simon Harris leadership looks like within the confines of the programme for government. He needs to be making specific movements in terms of business. If he does it on small businesses, which is what it's been asked for, I don't think he'll meet with any political opposition. He needs to be making a strong move in terms of law and order, not only to convince the electorate, but to convince the 1,500 to 2,000 people, Fine Gael people, who are going to Galway this weekend, that he is, who many of whom are disgruntled. I mean, there's 12 people stepping down. Each of those 12 people comes with a cadre of supporters who probably won't be as active come the next set of elections, and for that then there's a core Fine Gael. If they're disgruntled, there's a core Fine Gael vote that is disgruntled as well. He needs to send very, very strong signals. I don't think a mini budget would work from an electoral point of view. It might work in terms of his own core Fine Gael vote, though, but I would be advising him to hold off, wait until the budget, and have whatever changes he's putting in be as close as possible to a general election. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Gabby says that is really important, you know, to get the grassroots behind him. That's it. That is his biggest challenge.
Yeah,
and so satisfying those calls for business to be taken care of, for there to be more for farmers. I mean, a mini budget might be the way to do that, to shore up that support.
I think he does need to shore up that support, and I think you're right, there is an argument for it. At the same time, he needs to be seen to be able to deliver votes ultimately, and the best way of delivering votes, I would say, is to whatever gimmies, whatever initiatives he's bringing in, to have it as close as possible to when people are voting.
Okay, and Father, I mean, you're looking at this situation now, I suppose, from an electoral point of view. Do you see, with Simon Harris going in next week, that it'll be another year now?
Well, first of all, I do think that the referendum is proving to be a political watershed moment. And I think what we're seeing now is most of the political parties seeking to recalibrate the direction that they're going in. And that seems to be happening with Fine Gael at the moment. I think Fine Gael were caught in that they had become a South Dublin political party that wasn't looking, never mind across the river, but definitely weren't looking beyond the M50 in the last number of years. But the key issue for them is this just political rhetoric in terms of this new approach, or will there actually be change? And in terms of the paralysis that we see in housing and healthcare, the cost of living crisis, I'm seeing nothing yet from Fine Gael that they mean business in terms of tackling those issues. Like, Irish people have actually received a fall in real incomes in 2022 and 2023. And that's at the heart of these difficulties. And Pauline mentioned, you know, the fact that more money has been given to childcare, which I welcome. But childcare is getting harder to achieve at the moment. Childcare is closing on a weekly basis at the moment. The Indo had a headline a couple of days ago saying that people were waiting 3 years to put their children on a waiting list for childcare in Dublin. So in most people's experience, access to these real services are becoming more difficult. And I think that's the key issue that we need to focus on. Obviously, the timing of the election is very interesting to politicians and people within the bubble, if you like. But for real people at the moment, they just want to make sure that they have access to the resources that they need. And there seems to be no change in the government's
relation. If he was to do a mini budget, though, before, let's say, the elections in June, would you not accuse him of trying to buy the electorate?
Well, no, we would call for a mini, like, I would love to see an election now, to be honest. But I do think there needs to be a mini budget. Like, research.
But is that not trying to buy the election?
No, because research that we have done shows that last year the government made 3.8 billion euros out of fuel taxes. Okay, so this was the highest amount of fuel taxes for the last 10 years, even though it was the worst of the cost of living crisis. So in one way, the government were giving tea and sympathy to people, saying, listen, we really care about your situation. And in the second way, they were pilfering their pockets with higher fuel taxes. And, you know,
But they reduced those taxes over the worst of the cost of living crisis. Now, I know they're coming back
in now. And
they're
on the way back up. And the problem I have is, I want to see people use more public transport. I want to see a reduction in carbon. But I think that the Greens and this government have been all stick and no carrots. So when it comes to changing behaviour, they're using the stick, but they're not putting enough of the alternative measures in terms of public transport and in terms of people heating their home.
You don't agree with that, Pauline?
I mean, I've just given the statistics. So, you know, Pather seems to just ignore the facts here, and that is that we have one new rural bus service a week.
A week, Pather.
And that has made a huge difference to people's lives, that we've cut the we've cut transport costs for young people by 50% and for others by 20%. Those are real differences. I get the train from Galway every week and it's jammed. It's jam-packed. And cycling then when I come to Dublin and we put in place more and more cycle lanes. So a lot of things have been done, but things that, that previous governments did not do, things that TDs who've been elected for a really long time and complaining didn't step up to the mark and go into government to do, and we have done that. And we're continuing to do
that. Are you directing that at Pather?
And we're continuing, I'm directing it at people who don't step up and go into government at times when they can change things.
Just very briefly,
and that's not.
Are you going to go into government next time, Pather?
I would like to go into government on the next occasion. We won't be going into government with Fine Gael, we can tell you that from now. But just on the issue of transport, I come from the county that's the biggest commuter county in the country. 80,000 people have to leave the county every day to go to work. Only 5,000 of those use buses and only 1,200 use trains because there's no train in the county. And in
well,
terms of buses...
Well, as you know,
in
I'm very much
buses,
supportive of a train for me. Like, absolutely, as
but
indeed...
But it's not going to roll in for at least
as indeed
decade.
Supportive of the Western Rail Corridor, which we're clearing the tracks on at the moment, and increasing the services.
But
you know, to Tullamore, you should be able to get...
They're all future tense.
You should be able to get a train.
The taxes are not future tense. They're present tense.
You should be able to get a train beyond 7:30 in the evening. All of those things are happening. And in fact, we've got a whole rake of new carriages for the trains. And future tense is important, but so is current tense and the one new rural bus service and the reduction in costs. All of those things are present tense that we have done and we need to continue.
I don't know if you all heard Richard Shakespeare this morning, the CEO of Dublin City Council, very keen on getting the cars out of the city centre, Tom. What did you think?
Yeah, and I think he's right, and I think he's right in the moment. I live in the city centre and I drive a car, and I like driving around the city centre. But if I end up getting blocked from driving around the city centre, I'll accept it as being
you're okay
reasonable.
With that, are you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love walking
Why
around.
Why do
the
you
city
drive
centre.
Around the city centre?
Well,
matter
because
of interest?
Because I live in the city centre. If I'm going anywhere in the city.
It's the best way to get around, though, isn't it?
Should you not be on your bike now or walking?
Well, it's an electric car. In fairness, I'm not. It's not like I'm putting any emissions out there. You know, the
you're blocking up the roads.
But I do enjoy walking more. I'm not a cyclist, I have to say. But if I end up being blocked, and as I was driving
around, is there a reason why you're not a cyclist?
Pardon?
Is it too dangerous for you? Do you feel?
I have to admit, it's because I really like my car. I really like
Tom.
I like listening to the radio. Remember, did I mention it's electric? I like listening to the radio. I like listening to my podcasts. I like listening to the music.
You can do that
I don't
on
like
bike
waiting
with
in the rain
headphone
for a bus.
Yeah, of course. It's or the bus doesn't turn up.
You know,
or the
I mean,
there you
fair
go.
Play.
The majority of people actually who come into Dublin go on the bus. That's the reality. And that's what the research underpinning this transport plan for Dublin was about the fact that it's making it easier for people who are on buses, who were the vast majority of people to get into town.
Tom put his finger on it there. People don't want to get out of their
cars. Well, you know what? We all love our cars. And I think that that's absolutely fine. But every day you make a choice. Am I using the car? Am I walking? Am I cycling? And people make choices based on what's the easiest thing to do sometimes, what's cost effective. And so you have to give people the choices.
But how do you get Tom out of his car? He just likes it.
He doesn't have to come out of his car. Not everybody has to come out of their car, but they, you know, if you
look
at...
Well, he'll be forced out of his car in Dublin City Centre.
No, not at all. Not at all. It may take a little bit longer in some parts.
I suspect I will, in fairness, Polly. I will. If listening to Richard this morning, I will be forced out of my car.
No.
And that's fine. I'm okay with that.
I can show you the map.
If I have to walk through the rain occasionally in order to stand in the rain for a bus, I might get used to it. I might not like it, but I might get used to it.
A way to get people out of the cars would be to solve the ghost bus problem. So in any given route coming into my county and right across the commuter hell area that is, you know, the greater Dublin area at the moment, so many buses are not turning up. And they're not turning up because there isn't enough bus mechanics or bus drivers, because the pay terms and conditions are not attractive enough to get enough of those people in. And if you're a young person and you've been late 3 or 4 times the last couple of months trying to get into work in Dublin, you just can't chance it again, because you can't say to your boss for the fifth time, sorry I'm late but the bus didn't turn up. You have to get back into your car and drive in. So it's the solving of those practical solutions is the way to get people out of cars and into buses. rather than the stick of putting up tolls and taxes continuously on
yeah,
on
if you look at North Dublin, for example, where I live, I mean, still the best way to get from point A to point B, not go through town but across North Dublin, is actually by getting in your car. So if I was to go to Phoenix Park, for example, for a walk, I'd have to, on the bus, go into town and then get another bus from town, take me about the guts of an hour. If I hop in the car, it's probably about maybe 15, 20 minutes. So, like, yeah, it's a no-brainer there.
Yeah, you see, that is a tricky problem that people are facing.
I think there's a feeling that what making buses work better is actually about forcing people to use buses and to get out of the car. It's not. It's about giving people a choice. And ultimately, it is our obligation, I think, as a country, to make it safer and easier to travel around our city. And my city being Galway. So I would say the same thing has to happen, like bus connects, which would bring you from one side of the city to the other instead of getting off in Eyre Square, which is, you know, the same kind of problem that Gabby's talking about. All of those things are in train and must be part of it. But it doesn't mean that you're stopped from using your car if you want to get somewhere, and particularly in rural Ireland.
Tom, I believe.
Yeah, I just think one of the things that Pauline isn't talking about, and in fact the Green Party hasn't been as strong on as I would have liked, is putting in much better infrastructure for electric cars. Mm-hmm. So at least those people who are using cars, whether it's around the city or across the country, are that there's almost zero emissions.
Do we want cars clogging up the city? Any sort of car?
There are going to be some cars. Mm-hmm. We're going to need some cars.
But you don't want
Claire.
To encourage you, cars into the city centre by putting a electric car framework in there. Like, we want to get the cars out. Am I right there, Pauline?
Well, there is a framework.
Because Eamon Ryan has said to me before in here that, like, electric cars is not the total answer. He doesn't want the streets clogged up with any type of car.
I mean, I think that electric vehicles are very much part of the solution, mm-hmm. and particularly for rural Ireland. You know, I'm in a very, very large constituency in West Galway, and we need proper infrastructure around electric vehicles. In fact, when the Green Party was in government last time, we started it and then it was rolled back on. So in some ways, when we were out of government, that's when a lot of things kind of stalled, and we're putting them back in place. So I do think it's part of the solution.
Well,
congestion is a different thing to emissions.
Tell me this.
Congestion is caused by cars.
If local authorities go with this proposal to have congestion charges, would you envisage that electric cars would be exempt?
I mean, Eamon Ryan's been very clear and always has been that he's not a fan of congestion charges.
But it is on the menu of options for the local authorities.
It's on the menu of options.
Why are you shaking your head?
Because the Green Party is speaking out both sides of its mouth. Like, I'm sorry, Pauline, you put out a strategy for transport in Dublin, and on that list of strategies, it says one of the things that may happen at some stage in the future, as all the advisors have emphasised, is putting in laws to allow local authorities to put in congestion charges. So you can't say on one hand, we're not a fan of congestion charges, Eamon Ryan doesn't want them, but also here we are putting in the strategy which would enable legislation so that local authorities can put in congestion charges.
It's common sense policy. If you look at, and if you engage people to do a report on how do you stop congestion, it's common sense that one of the options is congestion charges. That's absolutely common sense. I lived in London for a few years where we've had it. But I think you need very large cities in order to make it work, for one thing. So I mean, I don't see.
But
I
you're
don't
either
see
in favour of them, or you aren't. You can't be putting them into your strategies and publishing them as a government document and saying this is our strategy.
The strategy is to give local authorities the ability to take the measures they need to take, and one of those measures is the transport plan for Dublin. It is getting people to use buses if they can, to use cycling if they can. I mean, like, there's some parts of the cycling network where you actually have to move across. traffic to get from one side of a cycle lane to the other. And I do it every week myself on the Keys, cycle up. So all of those things have to be fixed. And I would like to see the local authorities do those things. But if they're not willing to do all of those things, if you're not getting the councillors on board, obviously you're going to have to do something else to stop congestion. But it would be dishonest to have a strategy that doesn't mention all of the various tools that councils can use.
So it's a tool.
It's a tool that I would hope that they don't have to use, but they may have to if they've done everything else and it's not working.
I actually think that most people would like to actually see some transition in transport, okay? But I think where the problem really lies is the front loading of the taxes and the congestion charges and the crosstown blockages, etc.
Just said
and
that wasn't being front loaded. So the
taxes are being front loaded. So we know that the taxes have never been as high on fuel as ever before, and that's really hurting people. And people are spending 3 hours a day commuting from Meath. At the moment, it's having a serious effect on the fabric of their own families. They hardly see their kids for about an hour in the evening. They would do anything to get into public transport, and they can't. But at the same time, they're getting higher taxes on fuel, and the tolls are being put up.
Okay.
So it's making it more difficult for them.
All right. I just want to move on to this other big story we had this week, this report from John Fitzgerald and Edgar Morgenroth about the cost of a United Ireland. I think people were really shocked that it would be 20 billion euro over 20 years. So that's a total of 400 billion. Tom, what did you make of the figures?
The figures seem sound to me. I would never question anything that comes from John Fitzgerald and Edgar Morgenroth. I know both of them, and they're two of the smartest people in the country. And here they're speaking in their expert area. So there's a lot of people who aren't economists coming out and saying these numbers are wrong, that they're much too pessimistic, that they don't factor in economic growth, and they actually do make specific calls in terms of economic growth. So I'd want, it would be a very brave day for me to be questioning two such eminent
How feasible is it then that we would look at that? Because as John Fitzgerald says, it's economically impossible for the Republic to take
it's
that
not
on.
Economically impossible. I have to put my hand up and say I would support United Ireland whatever the cost, and I think there are a lot of people who would be in the same camp.
25% extra on your taxes,
whatever the cost. It's like healthcare. Do we support having healthcare, whatever the cost? Yes, we do. Do we support looking after the homeless, whatever the cost? There are certain things that politically we're aligned to, and whatever the cost is, we have
but
to find a
way. But you can live without
a
United Ireland. Like, you can't live without healthcare, in fairness.
Sorry. You can choose loads of...
Pather, on the numbers. We talked about people who have been questioning those figures. Are you in that group?
Yeah, but I always think it'd be funny if Michael Collins and Eamon de Valera and Padraig Pearce were given a figure like this, and they were saying, listen, do you think we should go for Irish independence? And they go, actually, no, in hindsight, we won't go for it. It's very clear for me that self-determination is a key element in economic success, okay? So the north of Ireland is an economic backwater because London government is focused on the home counties. They're not even focused on the north of England, Scotland or Wales, which are suffering economically because of that home county's focus. So we know that if the north of Ireland had the same conditions in terms of the euro as us, foreign direct investment, productivity, etc., the economy in the north would do far better. The people in Uri are just as bright as the people in Dundalk. The people in Dungannon are just as hardworking as the people in Monaghan. And the people in Derry are just as enterprising as the people in Letterkenny. The reason the economy is stuffed in the north is because of partition, is because Tories don't care or know anything about the north of Ireland. In terms of John Fitzgerald, I think he's a fine economist, but he himself said he did not see the economic crash on the horizon in terms of 2011. No economist is fully fallible on this. You know, there's been other reports, such as the Hubner report from the University of Columbia, which said actually there would be an increase in the level of GDP of the state by 38 billion euros over 10 years if there was
So you don't accept that there would be a significant cost for the Republic if we had a United Ireland?
Well, first of all, John Doyle, who's a professor himself, said actually the level of transition subvention would only be about 3 billion euros during the transition period. So, you know, John's...
And do you think the British government would ease themselves out? Like, why would they do that?
Well, first of all, it's costing them a significant chunk of money anyways currently. Some of the figures that John included in that cost was, for example, pensions. But pensions are a social contract. The people of the north of Ireland have paid their national security money to
date.
But
we were told that they have this pay-as-you-go model, which means that they could walk away. And you'd wonder why they wouldn't do that. Because if they say to Northern Ireland, well, we'll ease ourselves out, we'll make this palatable for you, which then you're telling the Scottish independence to go for it as well, you know?
Well, that is the case in terms of the national debt that exists. And I know that's the argument they're saying, that the north would have to take its portion of the British national debt. But in terms of pensions, for example, it is definitely not the case that Britain would be free of their moral responsibility to pay the pensions to people who have paid national security all their lives.
Can I really quickly,
I want to hear from
I think it's a little misleading to say to people in Uri, and I know plenty of smart people in Uri are just as smart as people in the South. The fact is there are structural changes, structural problems with the education system in the North, which means that you don't have the same level of skills, unless you're from a relatively rich family, in the North as you do in the South. And it's why so many of the multinational jobs in the North are low paying jobs. There are huge structural problems that would impede any
Pauline, really quick word.
Just to say quickly, I think what's being forgotten here is the economic benefits actually to the entire island, North and South, of having one administration, you know, single departments in terms of the energy transition, we have a single island and we have two energy grids, for instance.
Two
education systems. So there's a huge benefit, I think. But look, we're one of the
I'm out of time and I wish I had more, but unfortunately I don't. Quick break before we go.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.